News Hour for the BBC.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, New York is set to become the 13th state to allow physician-assisted death. Governor Kathy Hochul says she's approving the legislation after lawmakers added new safeguards. Hochul says the decision was deeply personal. From the New York Public News Network, we'll have a report. Plus, we'll hear from Corinne Carey of Compassion and Choices, the leading advocates for the bill. Lace up your boots and hit the trails. Lackawack Sanctuary's hiking challenge is back, and it's for everybody. We'll tell you how to get involved. Murals, video projects, and even hand-knit hats. Monticello students are learning far more than art. We'll take you inside their student showcase that's building skills and confidence, and a preview of our own Radio Catskill holiday songs.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Stocks opened higher this morning after a better-than-expected report on inflation. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped more than 320 points in early trading.
The Labor Department says consumer prices in November were up 2.7% from a year ago. That's a smaller annual increase than reported in September, and cooler inflation than forecasters had expected. Analysts cautioned, however, the numbers may have been skewed somewhat by the government shutdown, which prevented federal workers from conducting their usual price checks in October. Prices for electricity and natural gas are up sharply from a year ago, which is likely to raise winter heating bills. The report comes as polls show Americans are broadly concerned about the high cost of living. That's putting President Trump, who campaigned on a promise of lower prices, on the defensive. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
President Trump is blaming current economic problems on the Biden administration. In a speech from the White House last night, President Trump insisted that prices are falling. This, however, comes as polling finds a strong majority of Americans say they are not feeling the economic relief that Trump is touting. The president has ordered a ban on all sanctioned oil tankers that are going to and from Venezuela. Not all tankers doing business with Venezuela are under sanctions, but the U.S. has seized one of them. And NPR's Greg Myrie says this could affect Venezuela's oil income.
This could be a major blow to Venezuela. The country is so dependent on oil exports. One of these fully loaded tankers can carry about $100 million worth of oil. And if the U.S. does seize more ships, this could have additional consequences. It may just scare away non-sanctioned tankers because they may just decide it's not worth the risk.
NPR's Greg Myrie reporting. Israel has announced the biggest gas and defense export deals in its history. The multi-billion dollar deals are intended to strengthen Israel's global position, despite condemnation over the Gaza war. NPR's Daniel Estrin has more from Tel Aviv.
The Israeli government says it's approved its biggest ever gas deal, a $35 billion agreement for U.S. company Chevron to deliver gas from the Mediterranean to Egypt, with about half of the proceeds going to Israel. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says it will contribute to stability in the region. Egypt isn't commenting on the politically sensitive deal, but being energy dependent on Israel could lead to improved ties between the countries following the Gaza war. The second deal Israel announced is its biggest ever defense export. Germany has expanded a contract to purchase Israel's Arrow 3 missile defense system for a total of about $6.5 billion. Germany purchased that air defense system, seeing Russia as a growing threat. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. The Trump administration is expected to announce new proposals for hospitals next hour. These would effectively ban gender-affirming care for transgender young people. The first plan would prohibit Medicaid reimbursement funds for doctors and hospitals that provide this care for patients younger than 18. The second proposal would block Medicaid and Medicare funding for these hospitals virtually. Every hospital in the U.S. takes Medicare, so the rule's effect would be far-reaching. President Trump has installed plaques beneath the White House portraits of past American presidents. As NPR's Tamara Keith reports, the messages underneath the plaques are unconventional.
The plaques mounted along the Presidential Walk of Fame are packed with insults, including lines like, quote, "Sleepy Joe Biden was by far the worst president in American history," and, quote, "In 2016, President Clinton's wife, Hillary, lost the presidency to Donald J. Trump." And the bio for former President Reagan asserts that he was a fan of President Trump long before his historic run for the White House. In a statement, White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt says, quote, "The plaques are eloquently written descriptions of each president and the legacy they left behind. As a student of history, many were written directly by President Trump himself." End quote. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
Pope Leo has named a new archbishop for New York City. It's Bishop Ronald Hicks, who's currently serving Joliet, Illinois. Like Pope Leo, Hicks was also born in Chicago. He will succeed retiring New York City Archbishop Timothy Dolan. You're listening to NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. RWJF is a national philanthropy working toward a future where health is no longer a privilege, but a right. Learn more at rwjf.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Governor Kathy Hochul will sign the Medical Aid in Dying Act, officials said, making New York the 13th state to allow physician-assisted death. The Democratic governor wrote Wednesday in the Times Union that she's approving the legislation after state lawmakers agreed to enact additional safeguards. They include residency restrictions, a 5-day waiting period, and a requirement that patients record their oral request to end their lives. Hochul wrote she watched her mother die slowly of ALS, a debilitating nerve disease. The governor said she weighed the state's tradition of fostering individual rights against her own religious beliefs, and she said it was one of the toughest decisions she's made during her time in office. From the New York Public News Network, WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports.
The governor says she wrestled with the decision over the bill, which will make New York the 13th state to allow physician-assisted death. Hochul says she pushed for additional safeguards, including a waiting period for patients who request to end their own lives. Advocates for the bill say it empowers patients and avoids needless suffering. Opponents, including the state's Roman Catholic bishops, say it devalues life and will have unintended consequences. Hochul says she didn't want her religious faith to deny people rights.
I can't stand here, even as a Catholic, and say I can't allow someone else to do something that I perhaps would not do. I cannot stand in their way. And that's the foundation of our nation.
The law takes effect next summer. In Manhattan, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
Corinne Carey, the senior campaign director of Compassion and Choices, has been at the forefront of advocating for the bill. She spoke with the New York Public News Network's David Giustina.
Good morning. With me is Corinne Carey, the campaign director for Compassion and Choices. She and a large team of folks working almost a decade on trying to pass a Medical Aid in Dying Act in New York. And this morning we learned that Governor Kathy Hochul is supporting the legislation. She posted a commentary in the Albany Times Union. I got you out of bed this morning, Corinne. We've talked over the years, about this, and I know you've had time to look at the governor's commentary. A lot of hard work put into this. Now some real success from your perspective, I know. How are you feeling?
I am feeling very deeply emotional, David. I read the governor's words this morning, and she's making this decision for all the reasons that I thought she would. Her commitment to freedom and bodily autonomy, her belief in compassion, her belief in the evidence, and her own personal, you know, experiences with witnessing someone who's suffering. It's very gratifying. I have to say, you said almost 10 years. It's been 10 years and about 7 months. So 10 and a half years of this. And I've watched people suffer over and over and over again. We've lost 29 advocates, and I do believe we're going to lose more people who've traveled to Albany and begged lawmakers for this option before it's all said and done, because this bill will not go into effect until probably July, probably the summer of 2026.
And, you know, there was some last-minute negotiations. She wanted some changes, some more provisions in there to protect New Yorkers. You know, many of the major opponents were worried about protections there. Can you give us any insight into what that was?
Sure. The governor really true to her word, reviewed the bill carefully with her staff. And so we've been speaking with members of her staff since the bill passed in June by both houses. Well, it was passed by the Assembly in April and then by the Senate in June. And ever since then, we've been talking to her staff about different provisions of the bill. You know, there were a number of amendments that we thought were really good additions to the bill. There were a few that we had to push back on for the sake of the people that we advocate for. And then there were a few that were easy to compromise on. It was important to her that this bill be limited to New York residents. I don't understand how that is a safeguard, and I do believe that people receiving care in New York State institutions should have the same end-of-life rights as those who live in New York. I understand every other state has had a residency requirement. Some states have rolled them back because we brought lawsuits. Compassion and Choices sued those states to say that the residency requirement was unconstitutional. But most states have them, and a court decision just upheld the residency restriction in New Jersey. So I understand that. The governor also wanted to really make sure that someone is not suffering from any mental health condition that would cloud their judgment. And so she required that a psychiatrist or a psychologist be an individual that has to see that person when they make the request. That started out as a psychiatrist. We argued that there were not enough psychiatrists in New York, and she understood that. So I believe that more mental health professionals are capable of doing this determination, but I think we landed in an okay place on that. And there's an audio requirement that someone who is requesting medical aid in dying make an audio recording. And we were concerned about that, but after speaking with healthcare providers and learning how many other files are appended to someone's medical record, we realized that that was something that most people could live with. And I hope it does not pose a barrier to people who need this care. You know, I think that this bill ended in a good place. We will obviously be carefully monitoring whether these additional safeguards constitute barriers to care. And we will go back to the legislature and say, you know, we've got to lift some of these additional restrictions, not to expand the bill, as opponents have said that we would always do, but to ensure that the bill that the legislature passed, that was designed to give access to the broadest number of people who are qualified under the law to receive this care, are able to do so.
She is Corinne Carey, the campaign director for Compassion and Choices, reacting to the news that Governor Kathy Hochul is going to sign the Medical Aid in Dying Act. Corinne, thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning.
Thank you for having me, David.
Yeah, that's David Giustina for the New York Public News Network. Some other legislation to tell you about, this time at the national level, that affects students. On Monday, Congress passed a law that will allow whole milk to once again be offered in public schools across the country. New York lawmakers say the return of more types of milk in schools will help upstate dairy farms and may reduce obesity in children. As the New York Public News Network's Aaron Shella Levine reports, the legislation has been a rare spot for bipartisan agreement.
In 2010, Congress passed a law limiting the kind of milk that can be served in public schools through the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National School Lunch Program. In 2012, those changes went into effect, taking whole milk and flavored milks out of cafeterias across the country, leaving skim and 1% as the only fat content options available.
That's been a big hit to our dairy farmers. It was a punch in the gut. And they've been trying to have it changed ever since. There were studies at the time suggesting that limiting whole milk in kids' diets was healthier, But there are new studies that show actually it's better to have whole milk. It's healthier, number one, and number two, it reduces obesity rates, and the kids like drinking it a lot better. So they drink more of it. We all know milk is so healthy for you. So the studies now show that we should have whole milk.
U.S. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer spoke Monday at A. Ohms & Sons Dairy Farm in Valencia. Last month, the Senate unanimously passed the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act of 2025, which revises the USDA's meal program guidelines to allow whole, reduced-fat, and fat-free milk to be served in schools. Monday afternoon, the U.S. House of Representatives followed suit, and the legislation has proven to be a rare point of bipartisan agreement, with co-sponsors ranging from New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand to Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley. Regionally, it's the kind of bill that has the support of Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, who is running for New York governor, as well as the support of Schumer, who said research on milk fat content has changed in the past decade.
The old studies are outdated, the new studies are correct, and we need to do it. The bill is a win-win for New York dairy farmers who can sell their products for kids, and the kids, it's a win for the kids, it's a win for the dairy farmers, and it's a win for the kids, who will have more healthy and delicious drink to have. It's about time we brought whole milk back to our school lunch and food programs, plain and simple.
Ashley Sardo, manager of national affairs for the New York Farm Bureau, said the lactose legislation will be a boon for New York's roughly 3,000 dairy producers that make more than 16 billion pounds of milk annually, making New York the nation's fifth largest dairy state.
While it provides schools the option to purchase whole milk, it has real impacts for dairy farmers. Not only will this increase demand for whole milk, but it creates a market opportunity for our dairy farmers. This will pull milk that has currently been separated out of butter, cheese, or milk powder into the fluid stream or Class 1 market. So what does this mean for farmers? As we know, dairy farmers are price takers, not price makers. It means that the shift in fluid milk could lift our prices that dairy farmers receive for the milk they produce. In turn, this will create greater opportunities for milk producers.
Eric Ohms says for every 100 pounds of milk sold, his farm pays 15 cents to promote dairy products across the country. Think the Got Milk commercials. For Ohms, this legislation begins to reverse more than a decade of misunderstanding that has left farms like his unable to offer a full range of milk to local schools.
For generations, we've been saying milk is healthy. And that messaging is finally getting through. Okay? So that feels good because we put a lot of money into promotion, but we can't promote Hudson Valley Fresh. We can't promote Cabot cheese. We promote generic. Well, we promote the benefits of milk. And it feels good that, because, you know, it seemed like people didn't care.
In Saratoga Springs, I'm Aaron Shallow Levine for the New York Public News Network.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, if you're looking for a simple way to boost your health and reconnect with nature, Lackawack Sanctuary has the answer. They're turning outdoor time into community wellness. Details are coming up. This is Radio Chatskill.
Celebrate the holidays with Truman Capote and James Thurber. We offer funny and touching stories from each of them on this special Selected Shorts. I'm Meg Wolitzer. Tune in from American Public Media.
Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Donna Fellenberg here from Catskill Character. You know, Christmas is coming. This Saturday is the seventh day of Hanukkah, and Sunday is the first day of winter. My guests this week, Doug Wirth and Joanna Breitstein, bring two different approaches to the holidays and one common message. Join us Saturday at 10:30 on Catskill Character and hear their message right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. If you're looking for a reason to get outside and move your body and reconnect with nature right here outside your front door, well, this is a conversation for you. Lackawack Sanctuary Foundation has long been a place where outdoor recreation, environmental education, and community wellness come together, and they're inviting people of all ages to take part through their popular hiking challenge. Joining us now is Craig Lukacs of Lackawack Sanctuary Foundation to talk about the challenge and other programs and opportunities Lackawack offers year-round. Craig, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So for folks who may not be familiar with it, give us an overview of the hiking challenge and how it helps connect people with the Lackawack Sanctuary.
Sure. So the Eager Beaver Hiking Challenge is from January 1 through January 31st, so the whole month of January, and it's to hike the trails of either Lackawack or our Browning Beaver Metal Sanctuary up at Equinox, to then basically every time you come to one of those sanctuaries, you track your miles, you log in the logbook that's there, and then basically for every 2 miles completed, you earn an entry to win Lackawack merchandise and other items, tickets to some of our upcoming events, outdoor field guides, and more things like that. So it's pretty simple. You basically just have to get yourself out there and hike. And just make sure that you log in how many miles you've completed and what trails you've completed. And that's pretty much it.
You just have to get out there and do it, right?
That's the hardest part, I guess, right?
Yeah. Lackawack Foundation is the 545-acre nature preserved and biological field station right here in our backyard. Talk about how this hiking challenge, outdoor recreation, other nature-based wellness are central to your work.
So we firmly believe that getting outdoors is a benefit to your health and wellness because of all the things that being outdoors does for you. The vitamins that you produce from the sunshine, just reconnecting to nature gives you a sense of peace and calmness. So we firmly believe that that is an important part to living and healthy living. And, of course, having sanctuaries where people can come out and go into nature is obviously part of our mission, is to teach people how to reconnect to the natural world around us and also at the same time preserve it at the same time, right? To learn a little bit about not destroying it. So so it's all interconnected into what we do, but our belief is just to get people outdoors and to enjoy nature because we're too connected to our phones and social media and all that type of stuff. So it's best, like, let's just get outside, you know?
Yeah, and the hiking challenge is a great way to get out there and do that. And you can jumpstart that with the first day hike. There's a lot of those that go on around the country. The first day hike 2026 is right. Thursday, January 1st, 10 a.m. Talk a little bit about that. And also who this hiking challenge is designed for. What are some of the ways people of all ages and abilities can get involved?
So the hiking challenge is really for anybody. I mean, kids can participate in that as well, too. I mean, obviously, we recommend that the kids are obviously accompanied by their parents. But and even our first day hike is welcome. Dogs are welcome, too, by the way. We always make sure that people know that they're allowed to walk, bring their dogs with them, but they should be leashed. And so, honestly, we feel like anyone of all ages can come out. Obviously, be cautioned because of the winter conditions. So it could be snow on the ground. So people obviously have to watch out for that. But even the first day hike is a simple hike down one of our main trails and just, you know, about an hour outside doing a gentle hike and then back to our office. And it's a good way to start logging your miles for this challenge. So and I know a lot of people like to get out and start the new year on the right foot. And this is the best way to get it out there is to go to a sanctuary.
Pun intended. Beyond your hiking challenge, that trail system is amazing, and you've got year-round programs. Talk about how that has a broader impact on the community and what folks can do, how they could participate in taking advantage of that.
Sure. So we're really gearing up for a very strong 2026 season, basically an all-year season, really, for us. We used to do a lot of programs just seasonally, but now we're beginning to offer programs every month, whether it's always going to be a monthly hike and some other type of monthly program. And then there'll be other programs dispersed throughout that. So that's very important for us because we firmly believe that people should reconnect to nature, learn a little bit more about the natural world, whether it's things about native plants or gardening for medicinal purposes, plant life, you know, any wildlife, that kind of thing too. And so we have that for the general public. We also have our veteran program that we put people in that can connect the same way with the general public, but it's more camaraderie with the veterans and the first responders. And then, of course, we obviously have our kids programs. We obviously do a lot of things for kids, especially our summer camps, our field trips for the schools. This year, we're also introducing days off camp, or what we're calling discovery days, which is basically when school districts around us are off of break, like for winter break or a spring break, Easter break. We're offering a time for them to come and be outdoors and be with us from like around 9 to 3 and basically just kind of learn a little bit of something and be fun at the same time.
Yeah. What are you doing during these, they're called discovery days. What's mm-hmm. happening with those and how do people take advantage of that?
So it's like it's basically like our summer camps. So it's a full day of programming. From, like I said, from 9 to 3, we're running 3 of them coming up in December now, between Christmas and New Year's. So December 29th, 30th, and 31st. We also have one on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, President's Day, Easter Spring Break days, which are in April. And so anyone can sign up from. It's mostly kids. There's an age range though, so. They're open to kids 7 through 10 because that's the age range that we're tailoring the programs to. And basically, it's a way to get hands-on exploration, creativity, outdoor discovery, learning new things. And it's basically a way to get the kids out of the house and doing something for the day off.
Yeah, it's a summer break in winter and very specifically tailored to winter. I just wanted to highlight a couple of the days that you have coming up, the programs you have coming up. One of them, winter survival skills, which sounds a little intimidating, but actually I'm sure kids would be really interested in that because it's about, you know, building shelter, making fire, exploring winter habitats, really team building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do that in the summer too. We also have a wilderness survival camp that we do. It's always good to get kids to learn, you know, what to do, like where you find the fresh water, you know, how you build a fire, because you never know what kind of circumstances you're going to be put into, you know. So but it's a fun camp though. I mean, I think it's the one that always kids sign up for first over any of our camps because like they're hands-on stuff.
Well, and to be clear, it's not like the show Alone and you're dropping them off in the wilderness and they have to survive. Structured.
We're not sending them off into the woods and say survive through the day and come back to us, you know. So.
But after this camp, they could if it happened. The other one that I thought was really interesting and intriguing probably for kids and also adults like me, animal tracks and signs. You know, you see all mm-hmm. these tracks and you don't necessarily know what they are. Talk a little bit about that one.
Well, yeah, it's basically, and we're hoping for a little bit of snow covering on the ground, right? Because that really helps us. The idea is to like teach them about, you know, the types of animals and birds that into the forest and basically discovering them through the snow tracks, really, in the winter. I mean, you can still do it in the summer too, through mud and stuff. But this one's fun because one of the things that we promote with our camps is that we're not inside all day. We like to be outside. So this one, I'm also talking about scat too, you know, like because a lot of people are like, what's that? I mean, well, that's deer scatter, that's owl. And some of the things we do, we, you know, dissect owl pellets and stuff like that. So discover what's in their diet and stuff like that. So all of that kind of intertwines in together. And then obviously there's some fun things that we do too, besides the hikes and stuff like that, the activities too. And that kind of leads into like the third camp that you were going to say, right? The art camp too.
Yeah, frosty foliage. Yeah. Because we're so used to looking out sometimes into the bleak winter and just seeing like, you know, every like dead trees. But there's really, if you look closely, you can learn a lot.
Yeah, and that's the thing about nature is like the first step for producing. When you think of the great works of art throughout time, I mean, there are people and places, right, of nature, right? And most of the great works of art are of nature. So that's the perfect place to start, you know, sitting inside, you know, our education center, looking out into the pond and just maybe doing a sketch of that. And so we do other things than just sketching, but we teach them techniques and, you know, it's about reinventing and opening up and unlocking your creativity, I should say. So,
yeah. And talk about how these are such valuable resources for families. I'm sure you get good feedback from families and mm-hmm. participants about these programs.
Yeah. So, We wanted to make it a way that parents could find something to do with the kids that supports educational, but that's fun at the same time, right? We wanted parents to be able to do some stuff. I think sometimes parents struggle with, you know, having their kids on a day off and they're just home sitting alone, either, you know, on their phone or stuff. And this is a way to get them outdoors, getting a little exercise by hiking, also doing some fun activities. So we felt like we can help with that and really encourage parents to sign up for the kids. It's not a long time. When you think 9 to 3, having a lunchtime, you know, break and stuff, it's not a long day and it's even less than a work day. Right. So, it's just some time to get out and learn something new that you're not learning in the classroom, but it's fun at the same time. Right. Yeah. And so that's kind of like our goal, make it fun, help the parents by getting the kids out of the house, and then and we go from there.
Yeah, not stuck indoors and glued to those screens.
Yeah.
You mentioned a few things that are happening in 2026. Anything else that you want to let folks know about coming up? Any initiatives planned that listeners should know about in the new year?
Well, so basically, people should just check out our socials or our website, because, like I said, we're planning a hike every month. And usually another program, an educational program every month. They're always scheduled every month throughout the year. For 2026, we're just about beginning posting them on our pages. But also, too, one of the things that are coming up in the spring, and I guess some people are looking forward to the spring now since we've already had enough snow, I guess, for some people. We have three runs here. Our biggest one is a 10K run, and that's in the spring. It's when we welcome our Osprey back to our property. It's called the Osprey 10K Run. It's for those who are running and also walking too. It's a 10K trail run. So we're looking forward to that this coming year too.
Yeah, lots coming up. I noticed also after the first day hike in January, a couple of other programs: Kitchen Herbs for Coughs and Sore Throats. I might need to sign up for that one. And Becoming a Master Watershed Steward later in January. Mm-hmm. Great programs at Lackawack Sanctuary. You can find more information about those and those Discovery Day programs for kids at lackawack.org. It's all right here in the region, right there in Lake Ariel. And we've been talking to Craig Lukacs of the Lackawack Sanctuary. Craig, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Have a great holiday.
You too.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn more about Engine's creative project at the Monticello Central School District. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, it's a happy holiday hour with festive meals and sides from vegetable master Hedy McKinnon and the beautiful traditions of the Persian solstice with Yasmin Khan. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
My name is Ralph Diaz, and I am a volunteer here at Radio Catskill. I come here every Tuesday from 4 to 6, and I host the All Things Considered. And I also want to thank everyone for listening at this great radio station. From all of us here at Radio Catskill, thank you for listening. Have a safe and festive holiday season, and a happy new year.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Murals, video production, and knitted hats are just a few of the creative projects Monticello Central School District youth are working on at the school's Engine program. Engine is a local educational nonprofit that helps young people use art, place, and connection to build communication and interpersonal skills. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar attended Engine's student art showcase at the Monticello High School yesterday and brings us this report.
It's a Wednesday afternoon after the school day at Monticello High School has already ended. Most students have cleared out of the building. But inside a schoolroom called the Tank, Savannah and Valerie work on a portrait together that didn't necessarily go as planned.
So we were supposed to do a landscape, but we kind of like messed up on it. So we're just doodling right now.
The Tank is a creative space for Monticello High School students, and every inch of the room is covered in art. Walls covered in hand-painted murals, string lights flickering, even a wall of knitted hats. Savannah says the unpredictability of what you may find here is part of the fun.
My favorite part is, like, once you enter this room, you feel at home. Everyone, like, accepts you for who you are, and, like, you get to do a whole bunch of random stuff and really anything you want.
At the Tank, students set the agenda for how the day will look and feel like. Thomas Bosket is the co-founder of the Tank's Engine program. He says that using art is a powerful tool for students to learn how to communicate how they feel about themselves, the world, and each other.
So Engine basically is a civic creative nonprofit. Our practice involves combining creativity with community, I would say community needs, but also community, like the dynamics of community. So I think that what you're seeing down here is a lot of the dynamics of connection, place, purpose, participation, support. They use the word perspective now because people are afraid of the word diversity, but same word to me. But having a point of view, coming from a particular perspective, and then communication. And words as simple as communication, I think, need to be unpacked to understand what do we actually mean when we say communicate. Are you communicating well with somebody? Are you just barking words at them? Are you actually exchanging? So a lot of these discussions happen down here organically because the kids say something like, I'll say like, let's do a project on courage. And they're like, what is that? And I'm like, I don't know. And then when we talk about it, they say, oh, you mean being safe and being brave. And then I'm like, oh, okay, safe and brave is courage. If you feel safe and you can be brave, you're being courageous. So I think a hallmark of Engine over the years has been listening and coming to these understandings of what's needed by listening and developing the program within. Not you heard me say it in the beginning out there in the video hall, but not when someone says start where the youth is at, what does that really mean? Like, and how hard it is to maybe, or how nuanced it is to come to where that youth really is, and then supporting that development.
From a community map with favorite cartoon characters.
And then I made SpongeBob. Like their home, like SpongeBob's home is up there. It's a little pineapple.
To learning how to repair a vintage record player.
With enough momentum here, you'll be able to crank this.
The creative projects at the Tank's Engine program capture what students may need to process what they're feeling. Sierra is a senior at Monticello High School. She shows me one of her favorite projects she's worked on. On a table, there's a large log of wood with hardware nails.
This is just like a piece of wood that I hammered a bunch of nails into. It's a mini project, but I came down here one day. I was very, very angry about something. I forget what it even was that I was angry about, but it was like I was trying to fix my anger, but in the process, I was destroying something else. And I feel like a lot of people tend to do that, so that's like a mini project and that's symbolism. But I had a lot of fun doing this. I sat here for probably like 2 hours total hammering these nails in.
On a large white wall is a map with the towns Bethel and Smallwood printed on it. It's a community map, Sierra says, and it's one of the projects that's helped her understand her neighborhoods in Sullivan County and how personal life interacts with the county structures like roads, schools, and policies.
What was drawn first was all of these like fun little caricatures and designs that you see that aren't very linear and stuff. And then we kind of had like a map overlay of like a town or community that we put over it. And then what the stickers are is there are places that are important to the students. And then there's the code over there on the walls of how we read the tapes. Like, for example, this is my house, and my sister put her name there too and didn't tell me because she's a butt.
How grant-funded programs like Engines may be affected by federal changes is still unclear. For instance, Monticello High School receives Title I funding, whose funding recently shifted from the U.S. Department of Education to the Department of Labor, a move that some experts say could cause grant delays or even program cuts. Still, the work continues. Amy Nardi is the founder of Choosing Happy 365 at the Tank. She says supporting students with creative, positive outlets has never felt more important.
What I see overall with a lot of students is that it is foreign for them to have a different kind of life or to have different experiences. A lot of these students have never, you know, been on an airplane or been out of the state or, you know, to go out to dinner. and, you know, put a cloth napkin on their lap would be absolutely out of their comfort zone. They don't understand it, and they don't think it's within their reach. And I try to teach them that you can have whatever you would like to have. And I speak about my own personal life with them. I went to Monticello school until middle school. And, you know, I put myself through college with student loans and paid them back. I didn't have anybody to help pay for any of that. And it was hard work. You know, I worked two jobs and built myself up as I, you know, went up through the ladder, kind of. And you can do it.
For some, the tank is a place to relax, to unwind. Students Miguel, George, and Landon are in a video game room. There's an Xbox and Legend of Zelda hand-painted on the walls.
The reason why I like coming here, it's not just for the games. It's meeting new people, having friends just play games and hang out and spend time in the community. It's a fun thing to do.
And what is your favorite game that you typically play, at least right now?
Fortnite and Rocket League.
What about you?
Same, Fortnite and Rocket League.
And Miguel, what about you?
Fortnite and War Thunder.
Okay. For Sierra and others, it's a place where her words matter.
I love being down here because my words actually hold weight down here because, you know, I'm a child in the broader sense that most people would view it. I'm still in high school. I'm a teenager. My opinion is not very valued in most places, and my words do not hold much weight when I speak. Down here, my opinion is kind of important, and people listened to me, and they value what I have to say, and we can work with that. And that's something that I've really appreciated about being down here.
In Monticello, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
Thanks, Kim, for that. We'll take a break, and when we come back, a preview of Radio Catskill's upcoming holiday music programming. Our own classical kid is here to help out. This is Radio Catskill.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole, letting you know that this month on Radio Catskill, we'll be taking a look back at the biggest local news stories of the year and showcasing the work of our amazing news team. Look, I've been here for decades, and I've never seen anything like 2025. We had more reporters making more quality news than ever before, and none of that would have been possible without you. Another thing that I never saw before this year? 24% of our budget disappearing overnight. You know, the defunding of public media was a shock. It continues to threaten the good work that we do, but it has not stopped that work, and again, that's thanks to listeners like you who stood with us. I thank you so much for that. And I ask that you stand with us again. We're trying to make our year-end goal, and right now, your donation will have triple the impact. From now until December 31st, gifts of $1,000 or less will be matched one-to-one by Newsmatch and by an anonymous longtime Radio Catskill supporter. You make a one-time donation before the end of the year, it will be tripled. Become a sound supporter, all 12 of your monthly donations will be tripled. Plus, gifts of $100 and more will also be entered for a chance to win a two-night stay at the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast. A renovated farmhouse sleeps four, located near the top of Hoke Mountain Road in the town of Walton. Go to WJFFradio.org, WJFFradio.org, to give today. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR, supported by listeners like you. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, every season at this time, we play a lot of traditional holiday music, and we have some new holiday music as well. And we want to give you a preview of some of that, and to help us walk through it is our own classical kit. Happy, happy, and merry, merry, Classical Kit.
Same to you. Good morning.
For folks, you can't see this, but Classical Kit is wearing her Santa hat. She's dressed in red. Very festive, ready for the season. So we started out on Sunday for the first night of Hanukkah with a couple of Hanukkah specials last Sunday, Hanukkah Lights and the Hanukkah Memories Melodies. This Sunday, we'll be going into some of the traditional stuff that you are used to hearing and some newer stuff, too. Selected Shorts kicks it off at 7 this Sunday with a special nostalgic Three Moods of Christmas Stories with a visit from St. Nicholas read by James Naughton. There's stuff from Truman Capote even. It's all part of the Selected Shorts that you're used to hearing, but with that holiday theme.
Sounds great.
And then at 8, it's a Jazz Piano Christmas, the annual concert of jazz-infused renditions of seasonal music. They're celebrating their 25th year, and we will hear a lot of great music from the performances of Hank Jones, Jason Moran, Jerry Allen, Billy Taylor, and more. It's hosted by Felix Contreras of NPR. Then at 9, I know one that you're looking forward to, one of your favorites, I think, A Chanticleer Christmas.
Yeah, and you know what? That's a good segue because we have a bit of a song that they do that was composed by Vince Guaraldi, who, you know, was a jazz pianist himself, and it's from Charlie Brown Christmas.
Yeah.
But they make it sound really, really sweet.
Let's hear that. Christmas time is here.
You know, one of the things that's really wonderful about radio is that we can bring you concerts from near and far.
All over.
And, you know, Chanticleer, they're based in the San Francisco Bay Area. And this year, actually, all of their Christmas concerts are going to be in the Bay Area. But different years, they go to different regions. They were in my hometown last year. And their Christmas concerts always sell out.
Yeah.
So even if you were traveling and you were someplace where they were going to be, you might not be able to go hear them, but we're going to bring them to you.
Yeah, that's this Sunday at 9 o'clock. They're renowned men's vocal ensemble. And the thing that's really cool about them, too, is that they're performing these traditional carols all the way back to the Renaissance up to, you know, Charlie Brown Christmas.
Yeah. And, you know, originally they were doing a lot of Gregorian chants, and they became really known for that. But they've just have such a broad repertoire. And even their Christmas music, they'll play traditional Appalachian folk carols. They'll play spirituals. They'll play Spanish carols from the 15th century that you've probably never heard, but that are just beautiful. So, you know, they're a group that will also play traditional things, but modern arrangements.
Yeah. Then later that night at 10, we have In Winter's Glow. It's the winter solstice. So we've got some classical sounds, more modern classical sounds for the longest night of the year. And then on Christmas Eve, to kick things off at 7, it's the Retro Cocktail Hour annual Christmas show. Always fun. Hip-shaking, tiki-drinking, stirring holiday tunes from Daryl Brogdon and Kansas Public Radio at 7. And then at 9, one of these newer specials that we're going to be bringing you, it's The Magic of Joe Hisaishi. He is a composer who's written for Studio Ghibli, is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
The animated company?
Yeah, the
right.
Yeah.
Anime, and they've been doing films for 40 years, and he has been making these soundtracks. And they're really amazing, and we'll get to hear his story and also celebrate his 75th birthday.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So that's at 9. And then at 10, the holiday tradition returns. It is a festival of 9 lessons and carols. Tell folks about that.
Well, you know, no matter what your faith or family background, there's certain things that become a part of your family tradition. And for me, listening to Radio Catskill's annual broadcast of a festival of 9 lessons and carols from King's College, Cambridge, has become one of mine. It always opens with Once in Royal David City, which starts with just a single boy's voice. My nephew got to do that once.
Really?
I think he was shaking in his boots.
My gosh.
And then in the next verse and a couple of verses, they'll join by most of the choir, but not the really deep voices. And then the organ comes in and the full choir. And then they start doing these complex harmonies. And it just builds and builds and builds. And at the end of it, for me, Christmas has begun.
Yeah.
You know, you might have been baking all day, busy with other things. And the other thing about it with music is you may have had family traditions that you don't get to celebrate anymore. Maybe your kids have all grown up and living somewhere else. There's nobody hanging up a stocking. But the music of Christmas can put you right back, transport you to other times in your life. Yeah. And It's just really magical.
Let's listen to a little bit of the Once in Royal David City from A Festival of Nine, Lessons and Carols, King's College Chapel in Cambridge, England.
Once in Royal David City stood a lonely cattle shed where
Yeah, that's, it's just, to me, that's really magical.
Here comes the chorus.
Yeah.
You're talking about.
Yeah.
We don't have all of it, but you can hear all of it at 10 o'clock Christmas Eve, 10 to midnight. And then we'll have an encore presentation of that. If you're not staying up late Christmas Eve, we'll have an encore presentation Christmas Day at 10 in place of Radio Chatskill. Yeah, you're right. It just, it brings you back to together in some ways. And also through the magic of radio, if your kids have flown the nest, you can all just ask your smart speaker or phone to play Radio Catskill and experience it together.
Yeah. And this is the 97th year that they're broadcasting it. They've been doing it for like 100 and some years. Yeah. But
amazing.
Yeah, wonderful tradition.
Another tradition is that, well, it's been a tradition for many years in New York, but I think it's the first time we'll be playing this here at this time. It's Handel's Messiah from Trinity Wall Street in Manhattan. Messiah first performed at Trinity Church in Wall Street in 1770.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You know, and it was only written, I think, less than 30 years before that. Handel wrote it. This is really unbelievable. He wrote the whole thing in 24 days. I mean, it's 3 hours long.
Yeah. And we're playing the whole 3 hours.
Yeah,
so from midnight to 3 a.m. Christmas morning, you can tune in and hear this. And of course, one of the most famous parts of this is the Alleluia chorus. And here's a preview. I mean, so powerful just hearing this little clip.
Yeah.
And we're bringing the whole 3 hours to you starting midnight, Christmas morning. And, you know, we had a tradition in our family growing up going to midnight mass.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would come home and get to open one gift.
Right.
And this has been a New York City tradition for many, many years. And one of the amazing and just really, I don't know, thrilling things about it is it's so grand. They're all dressed up in formal wear, the chorus. And it just is, I don't know, there's something about this sense of place and the music. It just brings you into this mindset of grandeur and I don't know, there's something about it that makes you feel so in the spirit.
And it also kind of, I mean, I haven't lived in the city for a long time now, but I really feel so connected to the city when I hear this because the incredible talent.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's their own Baroque orchestra
of
that church.
Of the church.
And their youth chorus is singing and the, you know, and their choir. And I saw this year's stream of just part one, and they don't bring in outside opera singers.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't know that these were not people from the Met. You know?
Yeah. Well, that clip actually was from YouTube, and I was watching that portion of it, and I was thinking like, oh, wow, these guys are just pro, top of their game. And then to know that like, oh, they're just part, this is part of, you know, the church's own ensemble, you know, it's amazing. And it does connect you back to the city and being back there.
Yeah.
And there is something about like that whole idea and concept of that. Needless to say, our church did not have its own chorus and Our service was not 3 hours long. I never would have made it as a kid. But anyway, later in the day, as I mentioned, Festival of Nine Lessons and Carols Encore at 10 a.m. Christmas Day. And then from noon to 4, Tinsel Tales will be bringing you NPR's Christmas Favorites, an afternoon of storytelling with tales from the archives of NPR from the likes of David Sedaris, Bailey White, John Henry Falk, telling stories of the season along with other NPR voices past and present. And then for New Year's, we'll be back the following week with some swinging sounds of the Retro Cocktail. I love that the Retro Cocktail Hour lands on New Year's Eve. It could not be more perfect this year. That starts at 7. And then at 9 on New Year's Eve, it's NPR's Toast of the Nation, a tradition every New Year's Eve since the 1970s. So that's some of our holiday programming that's coming up. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm getting in the spirit finally.
Me too.
Maybe because the snow is melting a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it sounds counterintuitive, but I'm ready for it to be a little more mild. Christmas. How about that?
My husband had to get out the backhoe to clear the pile of snow that the plows left so that we could actually get to our car. That's how much snow there was piled up.
Any special plans for you guys for the holidays?
I don't know. Can I say this on air?
Oh, I don't know. Is it something that we shouldn't say?
Well, this is going to be the last Christmas I have not being a grandmother.
Oh, well, then I think I can say congratulations then, right?
Yeah.
Okay, congratulations.
Yeah.
I understand why you're not sure if you can say this or not. Nobody will tell. Everybody, just keep it a secret. Well, congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Wow. Okay, great. Classical Kit, thank you so much. Thank you for all of the classical music and news and information you've been bringing us all throughout the year. And we look forward to more in the new year.
My pleasure.
So
thank
happy
you.
And merry to you and to George and to the new little one that's coming.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to go out with Chanticleer again. This is Mary and Baby in the Morning. If you want to find the full list of all of our holiday programming, just go to wjffradio.org. You'll see it right there. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Mary, Mary, what's the matter? Oh, Jerusalem in the morning. I said, my poor Mary, what's the matter? Oh, Jerusalem in the morning. Oh, 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 Joseph, Joseph, what is the matter? Oh, Jerusalem in the morning. Well, now, Joseph, Joseph, what's the matter? Oh, Jerusalem in the morning. Night is chilly. What's the matter? Oh, Jerusalem in the morning. The night is chilly. What is the matter? Oh, Jerusalem in the morning.
I hear the
hearts in bawling, bands are squalling. Oh, Jerusalem in the morning.
I hear the
cattle lowing, rooster crowing. Oh, Jerusalem in the morning. Mary, Mary, what's the matter? Oh, Jerusalem in the morning. I'm singing.
Support comes from the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance in Narrowsburg, whose 21st annual Small Works group exhibition, Art and Sixes, will be on view from November 15th until December 21st. More information at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. Information and schedule at CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
This week on This American Life. Nearly every night in Portland, left-wing protesters and right-wing streamers face off in the streets. But it's not like you think. They know each other really well. These are right-wing streamers at the apartment of one of the protesters. That's this week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
It's Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. There's a wind advisory in effect from 7 p.m. tonight through 1 a.m. Saturday for the Catskills in northeast Pennsylvania. Southwest winds of 15 to 25 miles an hour with gusts up to 50 are expected. And, of course, gusty winds could knock down tree limbs, blow around unsecured objects, and cause scattered power outages. Drivers, especially in high-profile vehicles, should use extra caution. Today's high 41, windier tonight, actually, with some fog and maybe rain and drizzle, low 35. The rainfall combined with snow melt from late tonight to early tomorrow could lead to some isolated areas of flooding. Tomorrow's high 52 with rain ending in the morning, still windy, low 21, much colder for Saturday, 31 for a high, 35 for a high on Sunday. This is WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org, Radio Catskill.